Also, to the extent reforms were limited, it frustrated the mass of the Russian population, peasants, who understood freedom to mean, that's what they thought it meant, they would get all the land. It seemed to be theirs by natural right, and instead they only got part of it, they didn't get the best of it, and they had to continue to pay. They believed it was theirs by right. Why should they pay? Also, to the extent that the reforms succeeded, they helped create groups that were able to increasingly challenge the status quo in Russia. Zemstvos, for example, city councils, university faculties, all of these in a way became schools of self-government for local elites, for educated Russians, and in fact, not surprisingly, became bastions, organizational bastions, of liberal opposition. Adding to that, all of the reforms also helped create a growing class of professionals, journalists, as the press grew, lawyers, various specialists working for the zemstvos, agronomists, statisticians, school teachers, and others. And all of these began to meet and form organizations and generally shared liberal ideas. Now, the contradictory and dangerous effects of all these reforms and the limitations on reform became painfully clear in the final years of the reign of Alexander II. In the years between 1879 and 1881, a major crisis erupted. As often happens, we've seen it before in Russian history, failure in war provided the stimulus. In this case, failure in another war concerning the falling Ottoman Empire, a war in the Balkans, the Russo-Turkish War in 1877 to 78. This was actually a peculiar failure. Russia actually won this war on the battlefield, quite successfully. They were fighting the Turks, after all, not France or England. Their victory was enshrined in a Treaty of San Stefano in 1878, in March. But Russia's victory frightened Western European countries, especially England and Austria, worried about Russia's growing influence in the region. And with the help of Germany, they forced Russia to go back to the bargaining table. And there, in June of 1878, almost everything Russia had won on the battlefield was taken away through diplomacy. This humiliation, this diplomatic humiliation caused by the fear many Western countries had for the rising power of Russia, infuriated public opinion. But this was only one part of the growing crisis in these last years of Alexander II's reign. There was also growing peasant unrest, mainly caused by disappointment over the results of the emancipation, but also short-term causes, higher taxes and inflation, bad harvests, effects of the draft. In particular, there were rumors that in return for fighting in the Russo-Turkish War, once these soldiers returned, since serfdom had already been ended, now they expected what they really wanted, what was called in Russian a black repartition. All the land would go to those who work it, to the peasants. Third element of this crisis was a growing terrorist movement by radical youths against conservative officials. Later we'll talk about the goals of these terrorists, but just consider some of the accomplishments. An attempt, not successful, to assassinate the governor of St. Petersburg in 1878. The knifing to death in public in broad daylight of the head of the gendarmes in St. Petersburg in August of 1878. Numerous lesser officials were killed, and from 1879 to March of 1881, 7 known attempts to kill the Tsar. Facing a political crisis, the government intensified its rather classic signature approach, reform and repression. The key figure in this was Count Mikhail Larise Melikov, a former governor of the city of Kharkov, who was named in 1880 Minister of the Interior and head of the police department. He saw his task as twofold: restore order on the one hand, with force if necessary, and offer reforms to appease discontent. He did this in a number of ways. He replaced some reactionary ministers with moderates. He relaxed censorship. He encouraged various educational and welfare reforms in cooperation with society, with the zemstvos. And finally, and most importantly, he proposed the establishment of a consultative national assembly. He was going to crown the edifice, in which representatives of the zemstvos and the cities could express their opinion on any legislation, though they couldn't legislate themselves. Really, really, in many ways, this was an astonishing proposal, the greatest step the government had gone to so far toward a truly representative democratic system, even though still only consultative. Had this proposal been approved and carried out, it might have considerably altered Russia's political history, as you'll see. Even more astonishing, it was signed into law on March 1st, 1881. And a few hours later, Alexander II was blown up by a bomb tossed by revolutionaries under his carriage, by revolutionaries of a populist party. When Alexander III, his son, came to the throne, he immediately renounced the Luris-Melikov plan, declared it to be a criminal and hasty step, though many liberals already thought it to be not radical enough, it was only consultative. And in the wake of Alexander's assassination, the government decided to be even more strongly than ever on the side of the notion that reform was dangerous. The pendulum, in other words, would swing much more strongly back in the direction of control and order, and the rulers would try to hold it in that position as never before. Next time, we return to the increasingly dangerous history, you've already seen one effects of it, of the rise of a liberal and radical movement of dissent among the educated, something itself that was pushing the government even more in the other direction.